Welcome, welcome everyone to Redacted on this very rainy, windy Tuesday, Taco Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So if you hear some blustering out there, it's the winds, it's the howling, it's the reckoning. I feel like it's the reckoning.
Okay.
It's kind of an ominous sound, obviously, for what major news we've got this afternoon, because we have a major update on what's happening at the nuclear power plant, the largest nuclear power plant in Europe, as troops are amassing around this, and questions as to why Russia is not hitting back and hitting these forces that are amassing there. Very, very interesting. We also have a leaked document that we've been pouring through it all afternoon, going through the details of this RAND Corporation leaked whistleblower document. It's eye-opening. It's fortuitous. It's troubling. So we're going to go through that and tell you what that portends for the rest of Europe and the decline this winter.
Plus, inflation numbers are in for August. They are just as depressing as they have been pretty much all summer. That's the lead. I'm going to blow it right there. We also have layoffs following high inflation. Those aren't good signs. We're going to break that down for those of us in the West.
And also, overnight, we had a major attack on Armenia, thanks to Azerbaijani forces hitting inside the sovereign territory, not the disputed territory. So we're going to be joined by a journalist who just returned from Armenia to talk about what that means, so we can all understand better that conflict and how it really is another proxy war for the United States and NATO. We'll dive into that.
Plus, we're going to talk about whether or not the death of the Queen means that America can now tax the Windsors. This is true. We're going to break that down and let you know how a member of the royal family is now an accidental American. And guess what? Now owes some information to the IRS.
The U.S. reaches its tax hands wherever it can. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, welcome. I see people in the chat saying, let's see, someone says, nice international audience here. Yes, we are live on this Tuesday evening, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 9 p.m. GMT. So welcome. We have a nice international audience. I saw someone said, hello from Serbia. Hello from Ireland.
Yesterday I saw South Africa, Korea, Australia. We are so grateful for our growing audience. You may know we hit a million viewers about a week and a half ago.
Subscribers. We have like 17 million viewers.
So we are tickled pink about it. But I also said I'm so glad that our audience is spread around the globe so that I don't have to worry about running into people at the grocery store, because, you know, that would make me a little embarrassed.
Although we were at Heathrow Airport and a very nice gentleman who works at Heathrow Airport came up to us and says, I love Redacted, love the show. And so hello to our friends at Heathrow Airport. Nice to see all of you.
Although if you do see me in the grocery store, say hello.
Yes. We do have a daily newsletter, we should mention. If you go to redacted.inc, it's totally free. You go there and you click on that, see it right there, and you'll sign up for a daily newsletter, and then it'll look like this. You'll get it in your inbox, and we cover, you know, we kind of welcome you to the day. We said happy Tuesday, and we talked about just some things you might have missed in the newsletter. Then we talk about the markets. We kind of look at what happens overnights in the markets, and then we dive into about four or five news stories every day for free, delivered right to your inbox first thing in the morning.
Oh, someone from Zamunda. I hope it's the king. Thank you for that.
So anyway, subscribe to the newsletter, redacted.inc, not.com, and it's totally free and gives you a kind of preview of what we might be talking about on the show.
All right. Well, I'm excited about the things we're going to talk about. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that.
Yeah, be like, why are you? Why I know you live here? Thousands of miles away from me. Why are you in my Trader Joe's? What is going on? That would be weird. It'd be a rift in the Matrix somehow.
So yes. We missed the audio clue. The audience didn't hear that. David said if he ever ran into Natalie at the grocery store, he would be very confused.
Oh, so, okay. David was muted. We got David's camera figured out. We just haven't gotten his microphone figured out. All right.
Yeah, that's all me. I sometimes get distracted.
Oh. All right. Well, good.
We do care very much what you have to say. David is our producer extraordinaire. Philip is his brother and other producer extraordinaire. They chime in a lot, and we welcome what they have to say.
That's right. And we welcome all of you. So please subscribe to the channel. And please, when you're starting this show, please smash the like button. It pushes us further out into the algorithm out there. It helps other people see what we're talking about here, covering the stories you're not going to see in the mainstream media. We are not paid for by billionaire corporations, so we get to cover stories with our own, with facts. We seek the truth. We're just looking for the facts. That's all we're doing here. So we have to answer to Jeff Zucker at CNN or anybody else. All right. Let's dive into it. Let's talk about the top story tonight, which is Europe on the brink. There's a lot of moving pieces today as it relates to the war in Ukraine, as it relates to Germany, Vladimir Putin, the nuclear power plant, and a leaked document from the RAND Corporation. All of this is creating like one big pumpkin spice latte
Okay.
of craziness. So first of all, we're watching Germany head towards collapse in real time on two different fronts, which we will get into. We have a leaked RAND Corporation report, which is stunning, points to total economic collapse for Germany and the EU if Russian gas doesn't flow. We also have a major update on the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, which has been under constant shelling by Ukrainian and NATO forces for the past few weeks. First, let's get to the power plant, where we have reports this afternoon that the largest buildup of Ukrainian forces to date is threatening the power plant, according to multiple reports. Now, accumulation of Ukrainian forces and equipment near the line of contact in Zaporizhzhia region, South Ukraine, is colossal right now. There's never been such a massive move of forces in this direction towards the power plant. What is the goal? You know, what is the goal? To destroy the power plant? To, I mean, by all accounts, that's been what they've been trying to do by shelling it.
It's very confusing.
Dropping suicide drone strikes on the top of it, shelling it, using HIMARS weapons from America, United States, to attack it. What is the goal? I mean, at the end of the day, it's the largest power plant in Europe. You're literally cutting off a massive amount of energy flow to Europe as a result of this. I can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, the strategy's lost on me.
So this is incredibly worrying. Why isn't Russia attacking these forces that are actually looking to harm the power plant? This is a good question, right? If they know they're coming here, why is Russia sitting back on this? Scott Ritter, the former UN weapons inspector, had these thoughts late this afternoon. He said, this is the sort of report that gives me concern. If it's true, then why in God's isn't Russia stacking aircraft overhead and destroying this buildup? I can guarantee you, if the United States detected a buildup like this, it would cease to exist. And that's true. The United States would rain missiles down on a location like
sure.
this. Yeah.
So, and it would be justifiable, right? Because we don't need a nuclear fallout.
Right.
Nobody needs that. That's in nobody's interest.
So, of course, all of this is energy related. I mean, again, we're talking about Gazprom. We're talking about the nuclear power plant. On September 2nd, Gazprom announced that the Nord Stream 1 pipeline that delivers the majority of Russian natural gas to Europe would remain shut, totally closed. Russia simply has had enough of EU countries funneling weapons and training into Ukraine. I mean, they've been training forces in England, in Germany, in Denmark, all over the place, in
yes.
France. And so Germany, though, this over the past 24 hours, may have finally crossed the red line, according to Moscow's ambassador in Berlin, said this on Monday, that Germany has crossed a red line with Russia by sending arms to Ukraine. The German ambassador has a message from Vladimir Putin and said this. This is Ambassador Sergei Neshiev. The very fact that the Ukrainian regime is being supplied with German-made lethal weapons, which are used not only against Russian military service members, but also the civilian population of Donbass, crosses the red line. Considering the moral and historic responsibility that Germany has before our people for the Nazi crimes, they have crossed the Rubicon.
Okay. Those are some scary words.
Well, he has a point. Something fundamental in Germany might be changing, right? A new Germany that's militarizing, right? They've, of course, funneled billions of dollars into building up their military. And so what is actually happening in Germany? Is this like a caged bear at this point? Well, today we have stunning leaked documents from the RAND Corporation. And it comes from a whistleblower who was leaked, who leaked these documents to John Mark Dugan. He was kind enough to publish the full damning report from the RAND Corporation. The leaked documents are only 4 pages long. So it's unclear how much of this report actually goes further than these 4 pages. Many people have wondered if Europe's self-inflicted economic crisis was all planned. Was it all done on purpose? Was it all part of a plan from the RAND Corporation, carried out by the CIA, carried out by the Biden administration? So let me just give credit here. This is John Mark Dugan. He got access to these documents from a whistleblower and then published them on his YouTube channel and linked to through his Telegram as well. And I'll just show you what the report looks like from... And again, I'll link it up in the description if you guys want to go read it for yourselves. I encourage you all to read it. Again, 4 pages, and it starts with this page. I just want to show you this, why this front page of this executive summary is so important. Look at who this was distributed to. White House, right? White House, Department of State, CIA, NSA, and the Democratic National Committee. Okay?
Okay.
Not so, the RNC? What
no,
the hell?
They just must have skipped those guys. They just sent it to the DNC and the Biden administration. By the way, the date on this is January 25th. This is a confidential research report. It's been published now multiple times in multiple different places. But it goes through on the executive summary page, weakening Germany, strengthening the United States. And I kind of want to pull up what Red Pill News did a good job of really highlighting all of this. So let's just go through this because it's really striking. So the executive summary begins with the title, Weakening Germany, Strengthening the U.S., with the ultimate goal being the infusion of cash into the banking system by European and NATO-aligned nations, hopefully being able to avoid significant military and political costs in the process. Now, as Red Pill describes it, and as RAND sees it, the greatest obstacle to achieving the goal is the ever-growing independence of Germany. That problem seems to have been addressed with the war in Ukraine and the sanction on Russia, resulting in the killing of the Nord Stream pipeline and the cutoff of natural gas from Russia into Germany. That alone will undoubtedly lead to Germany requiring assistance from other European nations if they hope to save their citizens when the heat turns off. Control of Germany and their governmental decision-making process seems to be chief concern to the RAND Corporation, they say, which predicts that the destabilization of the United States would lead to a quickening of the independence of Germany and the inevitable end of U.S. influence. So what this document is saying, in essence, and there's multiple layers to this, what's the biggest threat to the United States is a stronger Europe, a stronger independent Germany, which sits in the middle of all of this. And the way to crush Europe, to destabilize Europe, is in effect to destabilize Germany.
To start there. And it further says that this need is precipitated by Brexit. Because when the UK withdrew from EU structures, it says we, who is we, right, the Western powers, have lost a meaningful opportunity to influence the negotiation of cross-governmental decisions. So since UK is our, like, I don't know, like best bud that will do our bidding
right.
in the West, right, if the UK withdraws from Europe, we've lost our plant there, basically. Like, you know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we've lost our insider.
Right.
So, I mean, what's amazing is this paragraph stands out to me. And there's so many paragraphs. Again, this is only 4 pages. I wish I knew how many additional pages there were, and maybe we will see more of this. But right now we only have these 4 pages, but this paragraph stands out. The current German economic model is based on 2 pillars, the RAND piece writes. There are unlimited access to cheap Russian energy resources and to cheap French electric power, thanks to the operation of nuclear power plants. The importance of the first factor is considerably higher, meaning cheap Russian gas is the entire German economy. Without it, you put it into a friggin' free fall. Mm-hmm. Halting Russian supplies will create a systemic crisis that would be devastating for the German economy and indirectly for the entire European Union. So RAND, they predicted all of this. And now Germany is in economic collapse. And yes. According to Rand, this is exactly what the United States needs, is a weakened Europe. And we've seen now the euro fall below the dollar this week. So the euro has now unbelievable.
So mission accomplished.
Yeah, exactly. And this was published in January, ahead of the invasion. So, I mean, to me, it's unbelievable. And it's being played out right now. You're seeing it as we head into the winter, right? This report from Reuters says Germans could overload their power grid as they're now switching to costly fan heaters as gas shortage fears bite. So they're, you know, all of it, they're saying Germans bought 600,000 electric heating devices during the first half of the year, up almost 35% from a year earlier, according to data by market researcher GfK. Households have been stocking up on electric fan heaters, including portable devices, sales figures show, amid fears that Russia could further limit gas supplies in the wake of the war in Ukraine. And you have to wonder, like, now that Germany has been officially sending weapons and Moscow is calling them to task for it, when are they going to flip the gas back on here?
Right. I mean, it's interesting, right, because if we can presume that these powers that be actually read this report as it was who it was sent to, then to go on and act surprised that there'd be a conflict between Russia and Ukraine, which then trickles down into Germany, right? Just the other day, Caitlin Johnstone published a piece saying we really should stop using this word unprovoked conflict, right? Because these documents, among many other data points, show that the West knew this was coming, was provoking it, was maybe in fact hoping for it, right? So, but every newspaper falls in line and calls it this unprovoked, right?
Yeah.
It's unexcusable. And every time I see it, I'm like, are you reading history, right?
It's amazing. Maybe even pull up this other paragraph here on my laptop, Philip. The only feasible way to guarantee Germany's rejection of a Russian energy supplies is to involve both sides in the military conflict. They're basically saying that's the only way to get them involved. We've got to get Germany involved and we've got to force their hand. That way they're blackmailed, you know?
I just want to mention too that for eight years, Putin warned us like that we were intimidating him. We were provoking him for 8 years, and he's like, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah.
So in reference to what you're saying,
it's not even just sort of stimulating his ego or the idea of Western expansion, but also the fact that Zelensky in early 2021 did order drone strikes on Crimea, right? And so that is provocation by many accounts. I'm not saying, right, we take any one side, but we absolutely should not act like this came out of the blue. Like, whoa, where'd this come from? Why are they doing this? They're pure evil.
Yeah, and of course, NATO was there the whole time. You know, again, this Rand document, it shows our involvement. It shows how Rand was involved in this, the crafting of, they were there actively involved in this, the CIA, the NSA, the United States government actively involved for 8 years in this. So wake up. You know, if there's anyone still sort of sitting on the fence to think that this was just like, wow, Russia just randomly decided to invade Ukraine. Like, really, at this point? Please.
Like, well, and I know that Oliver Stone's documentary, Ukraine on Fire, is fairly old, but it's a really good documentary to watch for one reason alone, is how propaganda works and how they go into these areas and they create these organizations and they make these look like peace organizations. They print flyers, they get people involved like volunteers, and they make it look like humanitarian work when in reality it's propaganda moving toward a goal that they have, which is to, you know, provoke. So that's a really good documentary to go watch. And I believe he's making an updated version, but you should still check it out.
Can I just point out another piece of this? Because I can't get over this Rand document. It's so amazing. Putin may in turn decide to impose limited counter sanctions, primarily on Russian energy supplies to Europe. Thus, the damage to EU countries will be quite comparable to the one the Russians, and in some countries, primarily in Germany, it will be higher. But listen to this. The prerequisite for Germany to fall into this trap is the leading role of the Green parties and ideology in Europe, meaning they are going to use the Green Party environmental movement
against them
in order to lead Germany into this trap,
which is what happened right when Angela Merkel decided to shut down nuclear power despite the fact that nuclear is in fact the safest energy, as long as you don't bomb them, the plants, right? That nuclear kills fewer people per unit of energy than any other power that we've got right now and emits no carbon emissions.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So, I mean, but still took right a bat, took the fall for Angela Merkel's love of the environment to say that.
I mean, let's give it up to the RAND Corporation. I mean, they've got some,
this was good strategizing.
They totally figured out how to screw over Europe.
Like, I mean, someone to fall on their sword. This is how you do it.
I'm joking, of course. I'm not applauding this ridiculousness, but it's amazing to me that you literally have people in Washington, D.C. like, how can we destabilize Europe? Okay, let's provoke Russia. Let's also use the environmental movement against the Germans. We'll have them fall into the trap. That'll destabilize Germany. That'll help the United States. This is what they're thinking.
They didn't fall hard enough during the pandemic.
Right, that wasn't enough.
We did. So let's, this is the jab, jab, punch, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, meanwhile, Germany, along with other European countries, are scrambling right now to figure out to help homes, industries, all of the surge in energy prices, almost as if this was planned, right? And so yesterday, Olaf Scholz said, we're going to treat this like the Berlin airlift. And we're preparing Germans for the winter. It's going to be a cold winter. So Scholz is channeling the Berlin airlift to spirit and gird Germans for the winter, which is a really interesting analogy, right? Because so the Soviet Union blocks Western Germany after World War II, and then allies for 1 year in 1948 airlift it was the largest humanitarian airlift in history. For 1 year, dropping all sorts of food and supplies and everything for 1 year. And that really, so the Soviets blocked West Berlin, cut off the Allies, and this is how he's drawing this connection. It's a really interesting way to basically say, you guys just need to pay more for energy. We'll get through this because we're stopping Mother Russia.
Okay.
What? Like, help me follow this logic. I mean, he thinks people are stupid. I think he thinks people are stupid. I don't know. But, I mean, you have the protests breaking out, of course, over the past 24 hours in Berlin and in Leipzig as well. You have Con Murphy says Germany's two houses of parliament have passed emergency legislation to reactivate mothballed coal-fired power plants in order to support electricity. And then
coal, you guys, people do die from coal. Like, in mass numbers, from respiratory diseases, from the actual mining of coal. Like, we're shutting down nuclear in favor of coal, which does kill people. Okay.
Yeah. So there's your that's your craziness. I mean, this is Germany on the brink. And then you have Chancellor Scholz coming out and saying, well, we've created the possibility for two nuclear power plants in southern Germany to keep running in the winter. What the hell does that mean?
The possibility.
Yeah, we're going to give you some hopium here. Like, we've created the possibility that we're going to turn on two power plants that we've turned off in the hopes. I mean,
do you think this is lost in translation? Was it originally in German?
Well, yeah, I mean, he spoke in German about it, but
that's something that sounds a bit more declarative. Maybe. Native language.
If any Germans are watching right now, is that the accurate translation of what he said? I don't know. We've created the possibility for two nuclear power plants in southern Germany to keep running this winter. If we have any Germans watching right now, I'd love to know what you think about that. But then we have the protests. So now people are taking to the streets and they're saying enough is enough. This was in Leipzig and in Berlin, thousands coming out against the cost of living hike and saying enough is enough. We can't, we can't pay for NATO's manufactured crisis. I love this sign. We can't pay for NATO's manufactured.
And furthermore, don't want to, right?
Right.
Meaning we're not on board with this ideologically.
But if you're wondering, so I love this tweet to wrap it up. Powell Wargan says, if you're wondering how Europe is doing, Germany is planning to open warm-up spaces that you can visit to avoid freezing at home this winter. So if you get frozen at home because you have no gas, you have no firewood, you can go to a warm-up zone and you'll be warmer.
You know what chaps my ass about this? possibly quite literally as the winter comes, is that we just created, we just had a whole pandemic where we decided that we were shutting down society to protect old people, right? And old people are, the elderly and the immunocompromised are the ones who are more susceptible to deaths related to cold weather. So, like, haven't we as a society already shown that we do value these populations that are more vulnerable? So then, like, but we're going to let them freeze? Because how is it someone, an elderly person who's alone, going to get to a warm space?
Right.
This is not a real, this is not a serious solution.
I mean, you're going to transport people? You're going to get them in a bus and take them to a warm zone?
And then what? Go home and sleep in the cold?
Yeah. What the hell is that? Go ahead, Philip.
I was going to say, maybe it sounds like maybe there were other motivations involved in the lockdowns, whereas, you know, like, we're saving old people then, but we don't care about, like, people that are most vulnerable now, because it's almost like money was the real motivator for a lot of this.
I had that thought too.
So Germans in our chat are saying, yeah, the plan was to turn off those other three nuclear power plants. Now the plan is they might keep two of them on. So they're not even fully committing to keeping two of them on. Like, what right now, like, you see people taking to the street, like, you are watching Germany collapse. You are watching a desperate Germany right now. And there's of course concern about what happens with a desperate Germany. I mean, we've seen this before. What happens when you have a Germany that's, you know, well, we don't have to go there.
Well, let's not extrapolate.
I mean, other journalists there, are. I mean, but because when Germany is spending billions to build up its military, when they're now, they vow, this is something they never do, which is to send weapons to other countries. Now they're actively doing that in Ukraine. Training forces to attack Russia. Like, things have changed in Germany. And so when you had a country that was arguably moving towards, how many more nuclear power plants were going to be coming online of the new variety, and now you've shut all of them down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would love to hear from our German viewers what you guys think of this, what you think is happening right now to your country. Let us know in the chat below. That's another thing about this September 24th, what's going to happen, and I don't know. I
mean, read that super chat so that we don't read it out of context.
Yeah, someone's saying, people are talking about this September 24th. A German legislator leaked that something compared to 9/11 could happen as far as a memorable event. I saw a bunch of people talking about this yesterday.
In terms of, like, rallying German sentiment so that you're not as mad at the government for doing what they're doing, which is exactly what's happening in the United Kingdom right now. For all of the economic news that is not getting coverage because of the royal funeral right now, right?
I saw like Reichstag
2.0.
Yeah, yeah. I saw a UK broadcaster when the Queen was hospital, or, you know, was ill, and they weren't sure what was happening. And he was saying, he's like, you know, the top story in England, he said the top story in England has been, like, rising energy prices and people not being able to pay their energy bills and their rent right now. And then he tosses to this reporter who's awaiting news of the Queen. And he said, but all of that is, you know, takes a big backseat. That's of no concern right now. The primary focus is on the Queen. And the reporter was like, I don't know.
The Queen, at the very least, has electricity in Balmoral.
No, I don't think.
It's pretty comfortable.
I think people are still concerned about their heating and their electric and their ability to pay the bills, whether or not the Queen is sick or not.
Yeah.
Anyway,
going to extend the period of mourning to like 2 or 3 years? Stuff settles down and still mourning. We can't talk about anything else.
You're not allowed to talk about anything else right now. You're only allowed to talk about the death of the Queen. How dare you be concerned about feeding your family? How dare you even ask these questions?
You see that guy that got arrested for yelling? He was at a protest, an old man, not the coronation, but something. And he yelled, "How did Prince Charles get elected?" And they arrested him right there.
Yeah, and other people saying, "He's not my king," and they're, you know, grabbing those people.
So be careful how you mourn for the next 2 years as well, because you might end up in jail.
Yeah, just don't open your mouth about it.
Yeah.
We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about the inflation numbers today, how troubling that is as banks are now laying people off. You know it's bad when banks are laying people off, what this means. We're also going to look at the latest on Armenia overnight. How many people watching us right now live in Armenia? I would love to know that. You can share with us in the chat your thoughts on that. Bombing there, a couple of different sites were attacked overnight. So we're going to be joined by a special guest who just got back from Armenia to talk about that. And we're also going to look at the American tax arm and how it reaches out across the world to tax people all over the world.
All right, you ready to talk about the economy, or you need a little break?
No, I'm ready. Let's bring it on, because it's a shitter. It's in the shitter.
Yes. All right. Well, on Monday of this week, the stock market rallied because of sentiment that inflation data would be not so bad. And all these feelings, you know, like causing real world economics. Today, we got the inflation data for August, and it is still so bad. So markets tanked on bad feelings.
But I thought President Biden said we're out of this. There is no such thing as inflation. We don't have a recession. Everything is okay.
Well, let's go for the numbers.
Gas prices have gone down more than they have in the history of the world.
Yes.
The past, what, 2 months?
Right.
Okay. I mean, certain goods are up and down, right? The consumer price index, though, overall is at 8.3%. Economists were hoping for 8.1%. That's why those bad feelings. This means that you are spending 8.3% more for all the things that you normally buy, all things being equal. So here's a chart of what we've been through this year. Whew. We've been through this collectively. This feels like it hurt, right? This looks like it feels. What's that expression? You look how I feel.
You look how I feel.
That's what this is, right?
You look how I don't know. You look good. I feel like shit. So
no,
I don't know.
You say that to someone when they're like looking haggard. Like,
oh, you look how I feel. Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say to this chart. Okay. So we've been some hard places, but 9.1% was our peak in June, and economists were hoping, because you see, there is this downward trend. It's not very steep. We don't know, right? So 8.3% is our number, and the market's having a temper tantrum right now. Is this a sign, though, that inflation has peaked, or are we on the downward trajectory? Well, is policy changing?
I haven't seen any. I mean, I know. They did pass the Inflation Reduction Act. By the way, I loved how Janet Yellen described it just 2 days ago. She said, we just passed the Inflation Reduction Act. It's going to do amazing things to help our climate.
Okay. We will have those numbers. They will not be factored into August's number because it wasn't passed at the time, right? But then also they may tell us, oh, no, it's not working yet, when we start to get these month-by-month inflationary numbers. You know, remember that inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. So who has too much money? The government. Certainly not the people, right?
Yeah, when you print $8 trillion and you dump it on top of an economy during a pandemic, something is going to give, right?
Right. We knew this.
Some would argue Ukraine has a lot, too.
Yes. I don't know how much goods they have, but there's a lot of money. You know, consumer goods are a big part of this.
Yeah.
Here is CNBC's Rick Santelli saying, I told you so.
We're just going to discuss this. The thing that really bothers me with regard to inflation is everybody here on this panel agreed months ago that one of the reasons inflation was high was all the government spending. And after we agreed on that, what did the government do? They spent more. Student loans, welfare in terms of the CHIPS Act. Seems like nothing is sinking in. These numbers aren't better than expected, and maybe they should be, and maybe ultimately they're going to start to go back up again because we continue to go back to that well of debt and spending.
Okay, so he mentions the CHIPS Act, right? Student loan relief, but only for some, which we talked about will cost taxpayers billions. Military spending, he doesn't mention that, which is through the roof, not for members of the military. Obviously, they just got a piddly raise, but weapons makers are cashing in. He doesn't mention the Inflation Reduction Act, which, again, we don't have the numbers on yet. And if the numbers don't pan out to reduce inflation, they'll tell us, oh, no, it takes some time, right?
I mean, how in the world is the Inflation Reduction Act, which spends billions on climate change legislation and is just a boondoggle for weapons manufacturers, I don't know how in the world it's going to spending more money to reduce inflation. It makes absolutely no sense. and yeah. and they went along with it. And well,
that's
people
the Keynesian, that's the Keynesian model.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Spend more to reduce inflation. Like, where did you go to school to learn this stuff? And then people buy it. I mean, maybe that's why President Biden's approval ratings have gone up.
But that's why we have these big to-do about interest rates, right? Because the only thing the government seems willing to do is manipulate interest rates. The same thing's happening in Europe. In the UK, they were poised to raise interest rates. They say now they won't do that until the 10 days of mourning are up for the Queen, because you can't even think about the economy.
Yeah, don't even. Yeah,
because you're in mourning, right?
Yeah, you're so in mourning, you can't even think about paying your groceries or your rent or anything. You know?
Yeah. So about those too few goods, right, and too much money, hold on to your butts, because UPS and railway workers are about to strike in the United States. So those few goods are going to get even fewer. A 30-day moratorium for the strike between the union and the railway system.
57,000 conductors and engineers going to strike.
So it ends on Friday, and they say they are willing to walk off the job if they can't resolve the dispute around quality of life concerns. What do they want? They want to not be on call 24/7 every week of the year, which is how they have been working for the last several years. That will absolutely affect everyone, because 40% of the goods that are delivered to your neighborhood from a distance, which most of us do not only buy local things. I once read this study that said that if you tried to get a hamburger made locally, you could not do it no matter where you live, because every piece of a hamburger has to be shipped from somewhere. Every bit of the hamburger does not grow in one location.
So if you wanted like the tomatoes or the beef,
the lettuce, everything, the bun, the mayonnaise, the ketchup, like you there's absolutely no way to make a local hamburger with all the things that we're used to.
We can do that here with the farmer's market. I've done it.
Well, we can do that here. There's actually a
not all year round. You can't though, right?
No.
Yeah, so
there's
the beef we can.
With the beef, well, I guess, maybe the beef, but then again, if you want the tomatoes.
And the grain for the bread.
Like if you want really delicious,
Locally grown?
New Jersey tomatoes, you're not going to get it during the winter, I guess, unless they're shipped from some greenhouse.
Anyway, I digest. But I digest.
I digest hamburgers.
I'd like a hamburger. Yeah. I digest.
I'm a hamburger. What is that Popeye character?
Blimpy.
I'll gladly pay you for hamburger today.
Let's get back to the story. Stop digesting.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, 40% of the goods that are delivered to your neighborhood come from a distance by rail. So unless you grow your own or you make your own or whatever, that means that things you were used to coming your way will slow down significantly this year. Start knitting your Christmas sweaters. This depressing economic situation is made even worse when you consider that layoffs this season are about to hit, and hit harder than they have in years past. Now, a few weeks ago, Clayton brought this up about big rounds of layoffs. And I thought, no, because we've had an employer's market, right? Employees market, where people just simply chose not to work after the pandemic. That does seem to be happening.
Oh,
listen to CNBC explain why this domino effect is about to begin.
Why don't we start with the details? What's happening here? What you heard?
Sure. So Goldman Sachs has historically laid off what they call effectively their underperformers, the bottom 1-5% of the workforce. They put that program on pause during the pandemic, partially because it was a pandemic, but also, as you are well aware, the deal-making frenzy was just out of control. They had too much work and not enough bodies. And not only did they not lay off people, they hired people. But we've really turned a chapter right now in the deal-making environment. David Solomon said in the last earnings call that Goldman had that, you know, the pipeline has slowed. I'm certainly hearing that from the bankers that I talk to. And so Goldman is reinstating the program, and they're going to be laying off probably closer to 1% of the workforce than 5%. But it's still significant because it's really telling us, you know, where we are right now in the economic environment and how these CEOs of banks are viewing the year ahead. And they are effectively conceding it's not going to be as good from a deal-making perspective as it has been for the past 2 years.
So bankers.
Yeah.
are being laid off.
Not just bankers, though. Bed Bath & Beyond just had a big round of layoffs, although corporate staff, not store staff, since the holidays are coming.
And that's what we were saying, right? So you're going to see January, February is going to be a shit show. I mean, that's where the real predictions lie, right?
Yes.
That, yeah, we're going to ramp up for some holiday retail staff, and that'll affect numbers. January, February, get ready for the bottom to fall out. But, I mean, I think this is really troubling when you already have banks laying people off. Like, since when do banks lay people off?
Right, and a lot of these are luxury brands. For instance, Peloton is bleeding money and has to lay off. And now just their CEO and several members of the senior staff has been either stepped down or they were asked to step down. Rent the Runway was kind of a Wall Street darling for a while. Now they're laying off 24% of their workforce. Netflix, Remax, Snap. So some are saying that what we are seeing now is being called a white collar recession.
People in the chat are saying that in UK, I just saw somebody from the UK saying a ton of banks have closed in the UK. So, yeah, you're seeing it. David, you were going to say?
Well, I was going to say that I think maybe they watched the show yesterday because they're laying off and getting people out of there so that they don't make more than crypto environmental impact.
Right, yeah.
Yes, that's got to be it.
We got to hurry up and get out of here and make it so that we're not bigger than crypto with our footprint, because they're going to end up, you know, coming after us next.
Yeah, that'll be the case. I'm sure the government will come after them. I have to say, I think it's interesting, you know, the bankers closing, I think you're going to start to see this as, well, I mean, the Goldman Sachs piece is interesting. We didn't go into it, but they're betting how they bet on the subprime borrower market. They went through, and instead of what got them into the 2008-2009 collapse, which was subprime mortgage market, Goldman Sachs specifically was betting on giving out credit cards to subprime lenders. So if you had a lower FICO score, they partnered with Apple to bring you the Apple card, right? And the thing was that, like, basically anybody could get a credit card. Yeah, if your FICO score is not that good, it doesn't really matter. Like, we're just going to bet on these people now. So they were betting on this economy where it didn't matter if you had a low credit score, things were fine, economy's good, chugging along. And now these people have enormous amounts of debt. They can't pay back their loans. They can't pay back their credit cards. They can't pay their rent. A huge swath of American population is behind on energy bills. So now you're starting to see these pieces in place and starting to fall.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll see, you know, how these two things are related. Is high inflation, right? A strike of delivery workers, both rail and trucking and plane, if UPS strike happens. And then people losing their jobs. So that is kind of life as we know it in big disruption.
I would love to hear from our audience. Are you experiencing layoffs in your area? Of course, we were hearing this is the best job market in history, right? We were hearing this from the Biden administration. But now we're seeing this. Like, let us know in the community here.
Really quick, I was on my way to Starbucks this morning, and I passed a strike of teachers at the school right next to my house. There must have been 100 teachers there on strike for better pay.
Wow. And in, I think it was Minnesota today, there was 15,000 nurses went on strike. Wow. They've just absolutely had it. They didn't even want to mediate their strike conversations. They've just had it. They are up to here, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, let us know in the chat.
I wonder if that's an expression in other languages.
Up to here. I've had it up to here.
If you speak another language and you say that expression, let me know. I'm super curious about those types of things.
I'd love to know the Spanish version. Give me the German version of that.
Hasta el cuello is up to my neck. That is an expression. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, like, when we first got to this chart and I was looking at that, I could just in my head hear media spin on this, because this is how they do everything. But it's like you have to just go, inflation is the lowest it's been in months. Right. Doesn't matter that if you go back 4 months, it hasn't actually gone below that point yet. And we all know how hard things started to get, like back in April.
Right.
But they're chiming in like, look, things are great right now. They're great right now. It's like, no, it's almost just like a little dip. You know, it was just funny to me. Like,
and keep that chart up there, because, you know, arguably this data point is that this is actually double what these point. You know, we talk about the readjustment of the inflationary numbers in the 1980s, right? Like, it's arguably double that number that you're seeing on the screen right there. So this is the number that the government puts out, and we know that it's garbage,
yeah, right?
So again, even when we have like these artificial numbers, the jobs reports and all the stuff that the government puts out, we know that it's fake. We know that it's wildly off, and it's worse than this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Well, we've got more news to get to here on the show.
But first, I want to correct my Spanish because I just spoke portuñol, which I do a lot. Ate is Portuguese. It's hasta el cuello in Spanish. And ate el pescoço, I think, is in Portuguese. So,
well,
excuse me. I mix two languages. I do that a lot.
I digest. All right. We've got more news we're going to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about Armenia and the attack that happened overnight there. This is a very important story. And I, you know, just be honest. In our, it's nothing to be ashamed of if you don't know about it. That's why we do this show, is to cover these stories, because there's a lot of ignorance about this story in the Western media. So please, if you don't know about this story, just say, I don't know about it. There's no shame in that. Let us know in the chat if you, or if you're fully up on this story, that's great as well. But I just would love to hear your, we're going to cover that story next. And we're also going to look at the American taxing of the royal family on that. But first, from cringing at the pump to getting an eye-popping check at your favorite restaurant, inflation is hitting us all where it hurts, and it really hurts. That's why I started using Upside. Now, Upside is an incredible app. David started using it. He couldn't believe that he was able to, I think you were able to save a ton on gas just by using the app. And groceries, we were able to do that as well by making purchases online. It was really fantastic. David, how much did you save? You signed up for the app after we featured it on the show, and you saved a whole bunch of gas money, right?
The funny thing is, I signed up the week before we had it. When you brought it up as a sponsor, I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool, because I just signed up with them like the week prior, and I saved 67 cents per gallon on my first purchase at a gas station. I did have to drive a little bit. It was like 10 minutes, but to save 67 cents, I'll drive 10 minutes all day long.
Yeah, no joke. So that's why we started using Upside. Upside is an incredible app for anyone who buys gas, groceries, or dines out. With every purchase, you're earning cash back thanks to Upside. When you start using it, you're going to see that it works with all of, I mean, you can, if you go to your favorite restaurants, if you go to Save-A-Lot, you go to Shell gas station, a Marathon station, it doesn't matter. If you go to Burger King, Conoco, maybe you want to stop by Popeyes, all of those places. Like, you'd be surprised at all of the places you normally shop, that when you just use the app where you normally go, you can save money. That's how great it is. It's not too good to be true. If you've used it, you'll know how it works. Upside is a no-brainer. And then, you know, what are you going to do with all that cash back that you've saved? You can put it towards your rent. You can put it towards additional groceries, all of that. So to get started, download the free Upside app. Use our promo code REDACTED, and you'll get $5 or more cash back on your first purchase of $10 or more. So again, all you have to do is, whatever you're buying on Upside, claim an offer for whatever you're buying, like normal. You'll check in at the business, pay as usual with a credit or debit card, and then you get paid. It's great. In comparison to credit card rewards or loyalty programs, you can earn 3 times more just by using Upside. You get 3 times more cash back with Upside. It's crazy. Upside earners are earning more than $1 million every week. That's probably why they have a 4.8 star rating on the App Store. So download the free Upside app today. Use the promo code REDACTED when you sign in to get $5 or more cash back on your first purchase of $10 or more. That's $5 or more cash back on your first purchase of $10 or more. So if you buy $10 worth of gas, you save $5 right there just by using promo code REDACTED. So thanks to Upside for their support of the show. All right. Well, at midnight last night, Azerbaijan launched devastating attacks that killed 49 Armenian soldiers. Now, that was at the time 49 Armenian soldiers was the number earlier in the day. It's probably far worse than that. Could be into the hundreds now. And it all happened on sovereign Armenian soil, not disputed Armenian soil, but sovereign Armenian soil. This is the largest escalation of violence in years, and it could reignite an old conflict going back 100 years, of course. I spoke to excellent independent journalist, founder of Syriana Analysis, our friend Kavork Almasian. He just got back from Armenia, and he joined us to explain what's happening in this new potential war zone. Kavork, welcome back to the show. I want to start with asking, why is Azerbaijan carrying out these attacks?
First of all, I think it is an understatement to say that 49 Armenian soldiers died during this operation, because the the Azerbaijani armed forces launched a very large-scale military offensive yesterday using missiles, drone attacks against Armenian positions. I think the number exceeds the 200, but the Armenian side doesn't want to mention all these casualties at once in one day. In my opinion, there are several reasons why Azerbaijan is attacking Armenia. First of all, we have to know that there are currently negotiations happening between Azerbaijan and Armenia to normalize the relations after the second Artsakh war in 2020. And every time Azerbaijan raises the bar of the demands or the preconditions of during the negotiations, and Armenia wants to negotiate on these topics, right? Azerbaijan attacks Armenia, or in even the independent region of Nagorno-Karabakh, in order to practice pressure on Armenia and force it to compromise. And because Azerbaijan is a much stronger side, it is a very rich gas-rich country, and they have an open bridge of weaponry coming from Tel Aviv, like every day during the conflict, because Israel is supplying Azerbaijan with high-tech weapons and technology, and even advisors and trainers. And there are a few reasons for that. One, from the American point of view, Russia is now in trouble in Ukraine, and their advances have stopped at some point, and they are retreating from some of the towns and cities in southern Ukraine. So they want to increase the tensions in the Caucasus, because between Armenia and Russia there is a mutual agreement, and if Armenia is attacked, Russia is obliged legally to defend Armenia.
That's under the Collective Security Treaty Organization.
Yes, the CSTO, right. Exactly. So at the moment, Russia is not in a position to intervene militarily in anywhere around the world, right? So so we have to see the timing of this attack, why it happened from the American point of view. From the Israeli point of view, Israel perceives Azerbaijan as an advanced satellite state for Mossad. And the spies of Mossad say themselves that they feel themselves home in Baku. There are no restrictions for them to work and operate in Azerbaijan. And why is that? Because they want to spy on Iran, the neighboring country of Azerbaijan. And because in northern Iran, there are hundreds of thousands of ethnic Azerbaijanis, and Israel wants to trigger a separatist movement in the north through these communities. So they infiltrate these communities and they urge them to rise against the Iranian government. So from both sides, we can see Azerbaijan is playing a proxy role for the Americans and for the Israelis.
It's like a broken record in this proxy wars. Like how many
exactly?
Where have I heard this before? How many times have I heard this? Where we use these countries, where the United States and NATO uses these countries, Israel uses these countries, and we use these as a means of proxy to carry out our own means.
Yes, but remember, Clayton, were it not for the current deals between the European Union and Azerbaijan, Azerbaijan would not have felt strong enough economically to launch this operation in a sovereign Armenian territory. Because when we say 2 years ago, when there was a conflict between the independent region of Nagorno-Karabakh, the ethnic Armenians there, and Azerbaijan, this wasn't internationally recognized Armenian territory, but this is a sovereign Armenian territory. And this attack comes just 1 day after the Minister of Energy of Azerbaijan, he bragged about the gas deals between the European Union and Azerbaijan, and says the influx of or the flow of gas from Azerbaijan will increase 30% to Europe at the end of this year. So Azerbaijan feels protected economically, and at the same time feels protected militarily by the United States and by Israel. Therefore, Armenia, which is sandwiched between two hostile countries, Turkey and Azerbaijan, they don't have the means to protect themselves. They don't have a gas to improve their military. They don't have any high-tech manufacturers or companies that they can be relevant, let's say. They just have an important geopolitical location. If we remember the history, just 100 years ago, when there was an ethnic cleansing by the Neo-Ottoman Empire against the Armenians, and around 1.5 million Armenians perished there, right? So what is left from Armenia now, the historic Armenia, is around 20-25% of historic Armenia. And what stops Turkey and Azerbaijan of having a continuous geographical connection between them is just Armenia. So, in my opinion, unfortunately, the current leadership in Armenia is also should be blamed because they have prioritized everything but national security. And in my opinion, as someone who studied international relations, I think the 101 of any leader is to secure the borders of his nation and make sure that he can deter any foreign intervention in Armenia. And unfortunately, the current prime minister of Armenia, who came after a color revolution in 2018, he wants to destroy the national identity of Syria. He at the beginning, he was anti-Russia and he was anti-Iran. So, but only too late after 2020, he understood that he lives in the Caucasus and not in Canada or in the United States, so that he can make alliances with these countries. But I think it is too late right now.
Turkish President Erdogan this afternoon saying that the only way peace can be achieved is if Azerbaijan has total territorial integrity. Is that true? Is that the only way that peace can be achieved? What does territorial integrity look like? I mean, I guess from the Turkish perspective, but what does it look like from the Armenian perspective?
I think from the Turkish perspective, the territorial integrity of Azerbaijan means a complete annihilation of the Armenians there. And I'm not saying this as an understatement, because the Turkish side, until this moment, they refused to recognize the Armenian genocide. And whoever refuses to acknowledge the historical, crime that their ancestors have committed against the Armenians, they will repeat similar crimes now and in the future. And this has happened a few times in the region, where there were Armenian towns or communities, and all the towns of the Armenians in Eastern Anatolia now, all of them are Turkified. All the names are changed. All the churches and the cultural sites are destroyed by Turkey. Therefore, in my opinion, what's the definition of territorial integrity is irrelevant for me, because in my opinion, the ultimate goal is to either completely annihilate the Armenians from the region, or the more practical one is to have a complete hegemony over the Armenians through economic means, through political means. And as I mentioned, and I'm saying this with a heavy heart, because I'm an ethnic Armenian myself, but the current leadership in Armenia is also to be blamed, because at the moment the national identity of Armenia, they equate it to fascism. And we all know that nationalism in Armenia is a defensive mechanism to unite the people against one enemy, right? It's not an expansionary ideology that you want to expand outside the territories of Armenia. So when you divide your country and destroy the national identity, and you start spreading sub-identities within your communities, there will be division among the Armenian people, and the government is responsible for that. And because of their, anti-Russian stances, why would Russia defend Armenia? This is an important question. People say, why Russia isn't defending Armenia? And if we see the history in the past 3 years since Pashinyan came to power, it's very sad. He can see in Trudeau his ally, he can see in Biden his partner, and not in Putin, because lots of people are so politically they're blinded by political correctness nowadays, that they want to look like a cool leader and not the true leader of his own people. So this is the result of following unfortunately, the American path. When you are geographically located in the Caucasus and you're in the backyard of Russia, and you know that you're in a sphere of influence of Russia, and nowadays the prime minister, after he understood all his mistakes, yesterday he called Russia and he asked for help. And I think the CSTO will intervene diplomatically to stop this conflict between the both sides and sign on a truce. But if you ask me personally, I don't think this is going to be the last clash between the both sides. And I think Azerbaijan will continue its aggressive policies until the Armenians understand that they have to take deterrence measures. And I'm not someone who want to have wars, but when you are prepared for war, you can also prevent the war. And Armenians, they are not preparing for war. They're prepared. They say we have to cook for our enemy. We have to make peace with the enemy, even if even without recognition of the Armenian genocide. So when you disrespect yourself and you disrespect your history, how do you expect your enemy to respect you? And I'm not talking about the entire Armenian nation, of course, the government in Armenia, right? How can you sign on a normalization treaty with Turkey and Azerbaijan without asking them to recognize at least the Armenian genocide that their ancestors have committed against? 1.5 million Armenians died. 3/4 of our nation is gone. So you have to prepare for the war. The Armenians should mine their important border crossings with Azerbaijan. They have to direct their weapons on the gas fields of Azerbaijan, not hitting them, but threatening them. If you attack our sovereign nation, we will stop the flow of the gas to Europe, right? Because they have the means to do that. But during the last war between Azerbaijan and Nagorno-Karabakh, the prime minister of Armenia went on TV and he said a very big lie about the Russian weapons. And he said the Iskander missiles that the Russians supplied to us when we fired them, only 10% of the warhead is exploding. The rest, it's like a joke. For me, sorry, I'm not a military expert, but right, there is no warhead that can explode 10% of its capacity, and the 90% stays on the soil, right? So unfortunately, we have a weak leader, a guy who came after a color revolution. He's one of the Soros guys, and if Armenians want to immunize themselves, the 101 is to start from your own internal house.
I want to ask you before we let you out of here is on the Western media response to this. It was amazing to see, first of all, a friend of the show, Lindsay Snell, had tweeted this. I thought it was interesting. She pointed out Secretary Antony Blinken's response to Vladimir Putin, and I thought this was spot on. Yeah, so his response to Putin and latest moves inside of Russia, where President Putin and the Kremlin will not commit these systematic abuses with impunity. We are holding the perpetrators of these atrocities to account. The U.S. and our partners will not be silent. Ukraine and its citizens deserve justice. And then this news on the attack inside of Armenia overnight, 4 hours ago, Antony Blinken tweets this: the United States is deeply concerned about reports of active hostilities between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Like, deeply concerned. That's about it. That's the Western response.
There is a Twitter account on Twitter. The title is "The EU is concerned." Like, every time, the EU is concerned.
The EU is concerned.
Yeah, deeply concerned. And today, also Toivo Klar, he is the EU special representative for the South Caucasus. He tweeted saying the fighting along the Armenian-Azerbaijan border and the reported intense shelling need to stop immediately. The EU is in close contact with the sides to contribute to the de-escalation. He doesn't even mention who is shelling who.
Right, and he calls it which fighting. It was an unprovoked attack, right? So
it's like, as if there are no two sides, no mention of who attacked who and which towns are being attacked. Because if you see the map of the conflict now and the geolocations, there is no place that the Armenians bombed inside Azerbaijan. All the bombings happened inside the sovereign Armenian territories, including near Lake Sevan and all the borders into southern Armenia. And if you see the Western mainstream media coverage, some of them are even confusing Armenia with Nagorno-Karabakh. So it's not only a matter of journalists who are not interested in covering the issue, but they're also ignorant about the Armenian case, and they think this is about Nagorno-Karabakh. No, this is about the national Armenian sovereign territories and not about Nagorno-Karabakh. They don't even know the difference between them. And unfortunately, the officials in the West, now also in Germany, very few politicians and members of parliament condemned. And this member of parliament who condemned this Azerbaijani aggression, because it's politically incorrect to support them, so we don't shed light, because if you support such cases, for example, Sarah Wagenknecht, she is from the left party. They call her a conspiracy theorist. So they want to deplatform her. They want to silence her from the media. And if other politicians say anything in regarding NATO or the Azerbaijani and Turkish aggressions, they call them anti-Islam. They call them right-wing fascists, etc. So there are always ways to silence these people and make them irrelevant to the public. Nowadays, in my opinion, one of the best German politicians is she's Sarah Wagenknecht. And when you just click her name now on Google, you will see countless number of articles calling her conspiracy theorist and calling her Putin's puppet, and she's on the payroll of Putin. So yes, there is democracy and freedom of expression, but you will pay a high price if you say anything that we don't agree with. And right. They will send you into an invisible prison. It's a media prison because they commit a character assassination. They completely ruin your reputation so that you cannot become a politician again or be reelected again. And after that, who will hire these people? How can these people work again in their careers, right? So it's an invisible prison. They send you into this prison and your career is over. Yes, you can speak, but there will be consequences.
I know I said that was going to be my last question, but I just have to ask you, what do you think Vladimir Putin does if these tensions continue to escalate?
I think Russia has enough leverage to stop this conflict. They have peacekeeping forces in the region. They're not going to walk into the trap that Azerbaijan is planning for Russia. And at the same time, if the only time I think the Russians would intervene if there is an existential threat under Armenians in Armenia, and Armenia formally asks Russia to intervene, because Russia cannot also tolerate losing Armenia in that region. They're trying to regather the former Soviet Union countries, at least internally, in order to be part of any economic projects in the Eurasian side or in the CSTO, militarily speaking and economically speaking. So Russia cannot tolerate that, but also Iran cannot tolerate that. This is very important. People aren't talking much about Iran, but I think Iran is more enthusiastic to defend its borders, and they don't want to have any change in the borders, because they know if such a change happens, the border crossing with Azerbaijan will be practically with Israel. And that is a very big red line for Iran, and I think they will also intervene, even militarily, to stop any changes on the borders.
Excellent analysis, as always. And thank you for educating our audience on this and making sure that our audience is not ignorant like the rest of the Western media. Kavork, always great to see you.
Fresh, thank you, Clayton.
Fresh from a trip to Armenia and recovering also from coronavirus. So thank you for doing the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Clayton.
And we've got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about what the royal family is going to experience at the hand of the American government. You won't believe this story. It's pretty remarkable. But first, I love the sound of a new sale on Shopify, and it makes me smile. When you set up a new Shopify store, you're going to get that little cash register sound if you use their application. And if you have an idea to launch a business, maybe, you know, you're at home right now, or you're thinking, you know, I really want to build something special for me and my family. I have an idea for a business. I want to launch it. Shopify is the place to do it. About 2 years ago, I had an idea for an online store. I was able to get it up and running in just a few minutes. And right away, you can start seeing sales once you start getting your platform up and running. It's that simple. It has the all-in-one e-commerce platform to start, to run, and to grow your business. All in one place is Shopify. It's a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like myself the resources once reserved for big businesses, customized, all of it for your needs. And what's great about it is it grows with you. So as your store grows or your idea grows, then of course Shopify grows, and you can expand your store. You can add more items, you can change the look, you can customize everything, but you don't have to do that when you get started. Start simple and just launch your store. Believe me, our show, everything we do started very simply, and it started as a Shopify account. Very, very easy to do. And once we hit those certain milestones, when we had a certain number of sales, we were able to expand it, do more with our store. Shopify powers millions of entrepreneurs just like me, from first sale to full scale. Every 28 seconds, a small business owner makes their first sale on Shopify. They've got 24/7 support, and you're never alone. It's more than just a store, because Shopify grows with you. The possibilities are endless. So go to shopify.com/redacted, all lowercase letters, and you're going to get a free 14-day trial. You get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Again, start selling today on Shopify by going to shopify.com/redacted right now. That's shopify.com/redacted to get a 14-day free trial.
All right, let's talk about the royalty and taxes. This is a fun story, and it's a thought experiment, but I think it's also very educational too. So here's the question. Now that we have a King Charles in the throne in the United Kingdom, will the U.S. government now get to tax the wealth of the royal family?
How would that work exactly?
Well, the U.S. Treasury isn't saying as much, but you've got to believe that they are excited about the two new royal titles of two young American citizens. Can you think who those people are?
There's two new royal American citizens in the royal family.
Right.
So was it Archie?
Archie.
Meghan and Harry?
Meghan and Harry.
Wait. No.
King Ralph?
No. And in fact, I mean, you could extrapolate this even to the Queen's uncle, who abdicated the throne and married an American. So here is the deal, is that because the rules are that the grandchildren of the monarch must have titles, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry's children will now get their titles, whereas before they weren't guaranteed them because they were the great grandchildren of the sovereign, who is Queen Elizabeth. Now they will get what's called HRH, or His or Her Royal Highness, but they are Americans, and Americans must pay taxes no matter where they are, what they live, and what they own. They must pay taxes. So this this is my theory, is that this is the reason that the royal family rejected Meghan Markle, maybe not because of race, but because of taxes. So we're going to give you a little historical context here.
Wait a minute. So before you get into the history, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what is it where you expatriate, you denounce your citizenship, renounce your citizenship?
And we will get to that, actually, as a possibility.
Okay. Okay, but I want to hear your theory. So before we get into the historical context, you think, so if you're giving me the theory before the history here, so the theory is...
My theory is that the royal family rejected Meghan Markle because they did not want the Windsors to have to pay taxes on that fortune to the IRS.
To the U.S. IRS.
To the United States IRS.
Can you imagine? Like, the Windsor fortune gets taxed by the American government.
So I think that this will eventually happen, and let me explain how. So when Prince Harry and Meghan Markle gave birth to their first child, Archie, they were told that he would not receive the HRH, His Royal Highness title. The couple then concluded that this was because of race, and they quit the royal family and they moved to America, and they told Oprah that this had to do with racial discrimination. Take a look.
All around the same time, so we have in tandem the conversation of he won't be given security, he's not going to be given a title, and also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
What?
Now, in this interview...
She's not white?
She's half white, and she has a black mother. Now, in this interview, Harry admitted that he was cut off from the royal family's coffers, and he then had to live on his inheritance from his mother, the former Princess of Wales, Diana.
Well, hold up. Wait a minute.
Your family cut you off?
Yeah, in the first quarter of 2020. But I've got what my mum left me, and without that, we would not have been able to do this.
Okay. So up until this point...
Do what, by the way?
Well, he says moving to America and paying for their own security and also living in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
Expensive.
Yeah, I couldn't have moved to this beautiful beachside community with a security force and, in California.
Now, up until this point, Harry's money is British money reported to the British government. But once he becomes an American resident, or presumably a green card holder, It is only really still Diana's inheritance that has to be reported to the IRS, not royal money, right? Which is nothing. Some report that he inherited 6.5 million pounds from his mother, but it is nothing compared to the Windsor fortune, which the Windsors are famous for protecting and not disclosing their wealth, right? So will they have to do this to the IRS now that Harry's children, should they inherit, will pay taxes not to His Majesty's Revenue and Customs, but to the good old American IRS, Internal Revenue Service. Now, let me explain that. Most people don't know that America is one of only two countries that tax its citizens no matter where they live in the world, unless they renounce citizenship or die. Eritrea is the other country that does this at a flat 2% rate. America is not so kind. They tax you with the full weight of taxation, whatever your tax rate is.
So just to be clear, if you're a United States citizen and you move to Armenia, whatever,
yes,
and you don't make any of your money from an American business. You're done working at Starbucks in the United States. You're now working at an Armenian business, and you make all of your money in Armenia. The United States government.
You're working at Stars Coffee.
Yeah.
Right. Starballs. Then you still are taxed by the United States government.
Yes. You get an exemption if you're working and living abroad of about $110,000. But anything above that, you will pay taxes on. And even if you don't make $110,000, you still have to declare all your assets and pay taxes at your current tax rate of anything above $110,000. So, this is how the American government seeks out citizens abroad and they enforce this. So if they think, so Clayton and I, we are American citizens. We live in Portugal. If we were to have another baby, which we're not going to, and we had it on Portuguese soil, the American government would seek out that baby and say, here's a passport, you're a taxpayer. Another situation is I have a friend who was living and working. She's Swiss, her husband's Swiss. They were living and working in America. They did not want their baby that they had on that soil to have an American passport, but they could not refuse. So a baby born on American soil, automatically American taxpayer forever. But there are other ways, if you were born abroad, that you can become an accidental American. For instance, the scenario Clayton and I, both American, have a baby on foreign soil, that baby's an American. If one parent is American and has lived in America at any time in the last 5 years, that may apply to baby Archie, right? That baby becomes an American because one family, even if you haven't, you still can apply if you'd like to, but automatically this is how you become an American. And then obviously any baby born in America becomes an American citizen. So baby Lilibet is American. So when Harry and Meghan left the UK, their children had no titles, but now those children will get titles because they are grandchildren of the sovereign. This was announced just a few days ago.
Oh, because so now, okay, so now they just, okay, this
so
is
so they've moved up in the ranks and they get the HRH title. Now, does this mean they get titles but not fortune? And the king sort of signaled in his first speech after the queen's death that, I got William and Catherine, they're doing what I want them to do, all's good. Harry and Meghan, I also love them and wish them luck in America, right? So this indicates that he may not be willing to pass down a fortune to them. He just loves them a whole lot because if they do become working royals, these grandchildren, or if they do inherit, they will have to report what they have to the U.S. government and pay taxes on those things, presumably at a very high tax rate because they are of wealthy family. Not only that, because of a law called FATCA, which was passed by Obama, every U.S. citizen and taxpayer has to report every single foreign bank account, including the amount that account was at its highest balance at any point in the year, plus the date that high balance occurred.
Are we greedy?
We are foreign nationals, Clayton right. And I. We have to do this. It is really stinking
That's
tedious.
Crazy.
So now His Royal Highness Archie and Her Royal Highness Lilibet will have American passports and royal titles and have to do this. The U.S. government will get a little look-see into what they've got,
yes,
and the U.S. government will take their fair share. Now, you better believe that the senior royals have already done this calculation way before this conversation about Archie's skin color, and maybe that is the reason that they had concerns about this mixed nationality child, right? Before, more about money and less about skin color.
I saw someone in the chat say, wow, what an interesting story. It is an interesting story. And someone just left a super chat. I wanted to get to that because on that point. So thank you, £5 from the Marked. Says, so the Windsors will pay no inheritance tax to the UK, but the US could tax. Way to turn the tables, America.
Right. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Now,
well, go ahead. It makes a lot of sense now that I think about all of the like historical inbreeding that happened in royal families. Now I get it.
Right. Yeah.
Keep it all in the house. Exactly. But I was speaking to Gonzalo Lira about this. We were talking a few weeks ago, journalist, and we were saying he absolutely believes the reason for this is that the United States government, Treasury, wants, they don't make very much money going around trying to tax these Americans.
They
around the
will
world.
If they're Windsors.
If they're Windsors, it makes more sense. But ultimately, the goal is to find out information because then you have to adhere to the banking laws. And so the Treasury can have access to information to all of these different banks around the world and get this information from different governments.
Well, just think about what they would get from the Windsors when the Windsors have gone out of their way to not declare their wealth.
Right.
In recent years, like, you know, they are accused many times of hiding their wealth. And so obviously the royal family doesn't care at all if Harry just, you know, go off, live off your Diana money. That's fine. Report that to the American government. They do absolutely care if it's Windsor money in there. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe this has been the plan all along since the Tea Party is like, we got to get to the wealth and we got to figure out what they make and then we're done. Then we can go back to normal lives. But it's like they've been trying for 200 years to figure out how much money they have.
Right. Yeah.
So they can get their peace.
Well, consider this cautionary tale. Most people don't know this. Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson was born in New York City to British parents, but he left America when he was a baby. I think he was just 2. That made him what is called an accidental American, just like my friend who had her baby in New Jersey, but didn't want him to carry the burden of American taxation their whole lives because they did move back to Europe. That's what Boris Johnson did. Now, this made him an accidental American, and it didn't bother him too much until he wanted to sell an expensive London apartment. The American government came after him for capital gains on that apartment, even though he'd not been living in America since he was a baby and he was raised as a British person. They still wanted 20% of the gains. He fought it and lost. He paid his pound of flesh to the American government in 2015 and then renounced his citizenship in 2016. So this is what tax lawyers, international tax lawyers, called pulling a Boris. They warn expats living abroad, do not pull a Boris. Don't accidentally become American or spend too much time there, because now you have to declare everything you've got to the American government and pay taxes on it. And if it's not your primary residence, which you get a credit for when you sell, if it's an investment, yes, that's capital gains. I'll take my 20% of that.
Why didn't he renounce before?
Because he didn't know. He just didn't think about it. He had bad advisors.
He didn't know that the American government was so greedy and vicious when it comes to taxes. He just didn't know. No one gave him that memo.
Now, along the lines of renouncing, could baby Archie and baby Lilibet decide for themselves that they want to renounce their American citizenships if they do want to become working royals in the future, or if they do want to get in on that inheritance? They can, but they can't do it until they're 18, because nobody can do it for you. You have to willingly give up your American passport, and they will presumably have to file with the IRS up until that point. So even if they have, I think that it's up to $12,000. If they make more than $12,000 a year, you must pay taxes, even if you're underage. And so they will have to file taxes with the American government. But if they expatriate and the American government decides that they are renouncing to avoid taxation, they could declare themselves as unqualified expatriates. Or I'm sorry, the government would declare Archie and Lilibet unqualified expatriates and revoke their ability to ever come to the U.S. again, even as visitors, because the American government does not take that lightly. If they think that you're trying to renounce to avoid taxes, they will punish you with whatever they can. It's very draconian, wow. Right?
Someone in the chat says, stop talking about the royal family. No one gives a F, and it's not.
You don't care about taxes?
I was about to say, it's not about the royal family. It's about taxes. It's about the American hegemony and how they will stick their tentacles. It's not a royal family story at all. If you're hearing that, you're missing the point. It's about America and its long arm of the IRS reaching around the world and getting involved in bank accounts from foreign governments. That's the story.
Right.
Well,
so,
I will say this, though. Go watch The Crown. That's a series on Netflix about this story. And it is a very interesting story, to say the least. Like, I'm hooked on that show.
Sure. But that speaks to another sort of base, human need to, hold humans up and understand that they're also humans. Like, this is something completely different, right? What we're talking about is now two systems that like to hoard wealth and protect their wealth that may accidentally become intertwined, right? And so the people will think, it's because the crown is racist, when it might just be because the crown is stingy. I don't know what's worse, right?
Right.
So it's very draconian. I think most people don't understand it. Once I spoke to a person who had renounced their citizenship to live in South America, and he said he just felt like, oh my God, because of all these FATCA rules and disclosure to the American government, I don't even live there. Why am I filing? He's like, I live in a financial concentration camp. And that was why this person wanted to renounce. Now, am I saying the royal family's not racist to Meghan Markle? I don't know. I don't care to discuss that in the sort of tabloidy type way. But I do think that this is an interesting piece. And you see it as these like passive aggressive moves now continue to happen towards Harry and Meghan. For instance, this there's outrage now that Prince Harry will not be allowed to wear his military uniform to the Queen's funeral because he has given up his position as a full-time royal, and he gave it up, right? Yet his uncle, Prince Andrew, will be allowed to wear his, even though, he's allegedly a scoundrel. But that scoundrel doesn't report to the IRS. And as a U.S. resident, now Harry does. So that's my thought piece for you. Share it with your friends and let me know what you think.
We're really doing it, Harry.
Your greed is no match for our stubbornness, sir.
It is amazing when you think about when people try to renounce citizenship and the hoops and hurdles they have to go through in order to do that. Our friend Andrew Henderson, who wrote the book Nomad Capitalist, he talks all about that. And if they make you go through like a cooling off period. They're like, are you really sure? So he describes this in the book. Are you really sure that you want to renounce your citizenship? Because you're not going to be like, you're going to have to not pay taxes to Uncle Sam. We're going to have one meeting and then you have to go home, right? Isn't it like a 24-hour or 48-hour?
Oh, yeah, you have to have several meetings.
In order to renounce, you have to go to an embassy and then you have to like wait and then go back. Andrew describes this in the book. You have to go back like days later. Like they want you to really think about it.
Yeah.
And then you have to pay on your way out.
You can't renounce it.
You have to pay $3,000 in order to file the paperwork.
But embassies around the world are backed up with these appointments. You can't even get appointments to do it.
Because so many Americans are
there's more people than
announcing.
Ever that want to do that. So if you consider like two equal employees working in, let's say, Dubai, where they don't have, whether they don't pay taxes, I believe. One person makes 150 and the other one makes 150. They're the same, but one person pays taxes to the American government, the other one doesn't. That's a significant disadvantage if you feel like you're not going to live your life in the United States, right? And so when you think about taxation on, apples to apples of people just living side by side, obviously that feels very draconian. But then when you think about how the royals have tried so hard to hoard their wealth, and then the American government having legal access to this because of FATCA, it's super interesting power struggle.
Yeah, fascinating.
Can you renounce it in the U.S. like as a citizen?
You cannot.
Could I be like, I renounce my...
Because otherwise, how would they get rid of you? You have to be at a consulate to do it.
I was just hoping I'd get a free trip to wherever I wanted to go.
No.
No, they're not going to send you somewhere. Like, I'd like to renounce Hi, my name is David. I'd like to renounce my citizenship, and I'd like to go to, Vietnam.
Leave, please.
Well, you think you could fly me there?
That Tina Turner renounced her citizenship in the early 2000s. Her husband is Swiss, and she wanted to become Swiss. But I don't think they had any problem with her around taxation, because Switzerland's even a higher tax nation. So it wasn't like she was, but she just decided she didn't want to be an American citizen, and she did renounce.
Wow.
Yeah, simply the best.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Fascinating.
Force another country to take you? I mean,
you should have another passport before you renounce. Otherwise, you're stateless and you're stuck wherever you are. You can renounce without, I mean, but in the case of these two little HRH taxpayers, you would assume they would renounce in favor of the UK passport.
Yeah.
Now, just out of curiosity, could Snowden renounce? Has he or could he?
I don't think so, because he'd have to go to a consulate, and if he went into the consulate, he is wanted there, right? So he could be, like, he wouldn't make that risk.
So he'd be arrested.
Oh, wow. So they could arrest him in a consulate and ship him back.
Yes.
I wonder if, that's a good question, I wonder if, because it depends on your foreign tax treaty as well for Snowden. Like, if he makes his money in Russia, does he have to pay American taxes?
Yes. Well, yes. It doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah. Well, he still would, but if they have a foreign tax treaty where he makes money and then it's taxed in Russia, he wouldn't have to pay it in America.
Well, you're not supposed to be taxed.
I'm getting paid in rubles. Here you go. Take it.
Right.
I mean, this is a complicated conversation, but what you pay to the American government should not be taxed in another state because of tax treaties. So you're not supposed to be double taxed. And presumably the royals don't pay taxes on a lot of that's sort of the reporting, is that a lot of it is not taxed or what have you, or is somehow exempted. So, you know, this could lead to a significant loss in their portion, which is why I think the king is so keen to keep his legacy running down the William and Kate side.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, thank you for subscribing to the channel. How many of you are new here? You can, if you subscribe, your name will pop up here on the big board. It's very easy to do. And if you subscribe, yeah, your name will pop up here. And then you can also chat along with us. We have a subscriber-only chat, so it doesn't get out of hand. So thank
you. Super chat show up back there, too.
Oh, super chat show up here as well. We are live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time is when we start the show. Yes, we have a 30-minute countdown ahead of it. But anyway, do we have any super chats we want to get to here before we wrap things up? I did mention one or two of them.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull those out. Okay, so... thank you for your hard work, Team Redacted. Can you please give shout out to my channel? No, we don't do that. Sorry. Mitrovic FFC, we must not trade Kosovars for EU membership.
Okay.
J Wiki, a German legislator leaked that something compared to 9/11. Oh, you read that one. Yeah. Boru, Russia is a pit bull playing with a pit bull puppy. Pibbles. Olympic Island, financial markets are likely to crash on 9/24.
Yeah, everyone's talking about this 9/24.
This is the Nostradamus type.
I mean, this is the German thing that we were just talking about. Like the. Okay.
But, did your highly credible source email you about this one? 9/24?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I don't want to go there.
Hero, printing money faster than Hunter going through laptops. And then GDNP and Miss Clever with super stickers. Flaming Mo, go green, compost, a globalist.
Okay. Yes.
Cool.
And James
Strange
Figueroa.
Strange universe. I don't know, guys. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was going to say James Figueroa said, answer some questions in the chat and don't be rude. Why would I be rude? I'm not rude.
We just did that.
I see you.
Strange universe. I don't know, guys. That RAND leak sounds too beginning with the cover page. Nothing on Y102 about it.
Okay, so Y102 is the radio station that was the first job in broadcasting I ever had. Y102 in Reading, Pennsylvania. So, do you think Y102 that plays the hits is going to stop there during a commercial break and be like, break some news about the RAND document? I know he's being funny, but that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Lionel Montenegro with a super sticker. Thank you. The Iranian Putin, love to Armenia from Iran. We got your back.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's an immensely important story, and I think people need to pay attention to it. So thank you for the interest in that story.
JM, very good work. Thanks.
Thank you
very much.
Comrade Thrawny, I never considered this around the IRS getting a snapshot of Windsor wealth. I'm with Natalie. Fascinating.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm glad
and
you
like Anthony Harris. Yeah, I liked it too. Anthony Hersig says Salty Army California Division checking in with three salt shakers.
All right. Cool.
And that's the last one.
Okay.
Oops. Sorry. We got two more. Dr. Norbo, please invite Dr. Steve Turley from Rita, the Sky News Australia. And Rita from Sky News Australia.
Okay.
And Adam A., thank you. I enjoy the show. That's all of them.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. You guys are the best. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing and sharing the show with your friends. Someone says, I really like your show, but your website needs to be better. Okay, we'll work on it. But go over and subscribe on our website. It's a locals website. It's through locals. So I think that's how we have it set up. If you go to redacted.inc and subscribe to our daily newsletter, you can become a newsletter subscriber, and you can also become a channel supporter. If you'd like to support what we do here for the price of a cup of coffee once a day, you can support independent journalism and it helps keep the lights on around here and to support all of our what we do here every day. So thank you, everyone. We will see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Now, go get some rest, everyone. Bye.